Welcome to the podcast. I'm Richard McClain.
I'm Mitch Parker.
And welcome to Please Leave a Message. This is a first for the show. The only repeat co-host we've had.
Oh, really?
Was Jess.
Okay.
And he only did like two episodes with me. So.
Was that all he did?
That's all he did.
What a stinker.
I know, right? He did two, and then he's like, hey, Rich, I can't make it this week, but go ahead and put it out. So I did one episode alone. Never again. Never again. No one wants to listen to me that long. I need somebody to play off of. Otherwise, I'm just super boring. I kept telling him when I was recording, and at some point I gave up, and then at some point he's like, yeah, I can't do it anymore. Speaking of which, we're in the process of getting the URL transferred ownership to me, so then we can get the website back at pleaseleavemessage.com. It might even be back by the time this airs. If not, the website is pleaseleaveamessage.simplecast.fm. And all the episodes are there, and you can leave comments and stuff on the episodes. Cool. I, in fact, had forgotten that I had set that up, so you could do that. It's through something called Discus.
Not familiar.
It's spelled like discus, like a discus that you throw.
Greek frisbee.
Yeah, but it's a comment and chat thing, and so I think it's just a play on words, because it's discuss.
Okay.
So that's what it is. I got a comment because I had been talking about Jeff Wayne's War of the World again, and somebody commented, hey, I went and checked that out. You're right. It did not disappoint. It was amazing, and how did I not know this existed? So I was pretty happy with that comment. So comment. Go to the website. Leave comments on the episodes after you listen to them.
Troll it up.
Troll it up. I would like some interaction. I feel like an island sometimes where I'm just doing this, and I'm sending it out there, and does anybody actually listen? I have the stats. I know people are listening, but I would like a little bit more community interaction, involvement. And that's the whole point of having the call-in number, which is 801-SKETCH-1. And I was thinking about that today. That's a number that I set up, and I've had it for a long time. And then when Jess left, I was like, okay, I need a phone number to call in. So I'm like, oh yeah, I have that number. We can use that number.
This 801. Cooler anyway.
801-SKETCH-1. But I realized that I didn't go on and check what my outgoing message is when people call in. So I don't know what I'm saying when people call in. So I'm going to have to check on that. So if you want to know what a goof I am, call it in now and see what kind of nutty, weird thing I left on there that's probably not appropriate for the podcast.
I'll have to try it after the show.
Speaking of which, we're asking for gaming stories right now. 3 to 5 minute gaming stories. I went to one of the, I used to frequent some gaming web forums, so I went to one today and I said, hey, I've got this podcast, call me up. So maybe I'll get some more hits that way, I don't know. I used to troll, that's not the that's not the right word. That's the wrong internet term. I used to lurk. I was a lurker there.
Okay.
I would read a lot, but I didn't participate a lot. I'm a lurker everywhere. But when I made that post, I noticed how many posts I'd made in the past. And I thought, I'm not as much of a lurker as I thought I was. Mm. That's way more posts than I ever remember doing.
That's good. So you won't seem as creepy. Hey, I'm, you know.
Yeah, it's got a lurker. It's got me listed as a veteran on the site. Ooh, so whatever that means.
That'll get you calls.
So yeah, give us a call, 801-SKETCH-1. That's 801-753-8241. So what's up with you, Mitch?
What is up with me? Just did the Salt Lake Comic Con Fan X.
Awesome. How'd that go?
It was fun. Did okay. I was tabling with Brady Gambles, and he did great. Lots of content, so that was good. And we sold some donut comics.
That's awesome. So. I don't know what to think of Brady. Like, every time I've tried to talk to him, I assume it's just because he's kind of a quiet, reserved guy. But, like, his humor is, like, out there, right? So you'd think he'd be kind of out there. But every time I try to, like, I even sat right behind him at this convention.
Yeah.
And I tried to strike up a conversation two or three times. Never went anywhere. No, I don't know if that's really...
Yeah, you should have him on the show.
I probably should. I mean, I read all his comics, for Pete's sake. Anyway, so yeah, it was weird not going.
Yeah.
Because this is the first one that they've had that I didn't go to. But it was good that I wasn't there because I got invited to my friend's wedding.
Mm.
And it was that same Friday.
Okay.
So if I had been tabling, I wouldn't have been able to go to that. And I've been friends with this guy since 7th grade.
Wow.
So
it was fate.
It was. I guess that was how it was supposed to be. He's been on the show before. In fact, he's on this episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I interviewed. So I have two friends that I'm still... Well, I have lots of friends from junior high that I'm still friends with. I don't think that happens to a lot of people. And when I say that to people, they're like, that's weird. How do you still know them?
Yeah, I'm still friends with a few.
You and Jess...
Yeah.
Have known each other that long, haven't you?
Yeah. We met in fifth grade.
Fifth grade, yeah.
So, yeah, we were friends in junior high.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've actually got a pretty good sizable group of friends that I'm still pretty good friends with from that era. I had two of them on the show. They co-hosted a show, and then for this episode is their interview. So, Joshua that's on this episode. So, I spent the day with him and other friends, and it was a good time. You said that you would come on the show and discuss Sasquatch.
Oh, yeah.
And I noticed you've got a Sasquatch shirt on.
Yep, I'm getting the Sasquatch spirit.
That's awesome. So, tell us about Sasquatch.
Well, Sasquatch, he's this hairy dude. Spends most of his time along the west coast of the U.S. and Canada. Yeah, he smells bad. And, yeah, most reports of him are he's like 7 feet tall.
Have you seen Sasquatch?
I have not seen the Squatch. Someday I hope to catch a glimpse, but I think I might wet my pants if I did.
Do you know anybody that has?
Not directly. I know people who know people who claim to have seen him.
Growing up, I had this friend, and his dad was a full-on hippie in the 60s.
Yeah?
He has a story about when he ran into Bigfoot. The first time I heard that story, it was... I don't think it was scout camp. I think it was a father's and son's camp out.
Mm.
And so it was late at night. Everyone was gathered around the campfire. It was a pretty good sizable group too. And it was, there's another guy that was there and he is like into all kinds of Indian lore and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He had rigged up the fire. And so we all gathered around for the campfire that night. The fire wasn't lit and we were just sitting around and then, you know, everyone's telling stories and stuff and the light's going down. And so it just gotten dark and we're all just sitting there in the dark and he's telling some story. I don't even remember the story, but he's telling this story, some Indian folklore thing, Native American. I don't know if what's the proper term these days.
First Nation.
Yeah. Is that what it is now?
I think that's the term they use in Canada.
Oh, okay. I don't know. And whatever. He was telling this story. And he talked about where somebody had called down the thunder from heaven. And then the fire lit up. It's just big fireball.
Wow.
It was really cool. He'd like rigged it up with electricity and stuff. And had somebody that black powder and what. I don't know. But it was pretty cool as part of the story. So he told that story. And then everybody was telling me different ghost stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. And none of them were that scary or anything. They're mostly just funny. And then Bob gets up. And Bob is, you know, he's the guy that was the hippie in the 60s. And he's just kind of a legend in the church that I attended as a kid. Because he's the loudest singer in the whole congregation. He's just kind of a big guy. He's bald. He's always got stories to tell. Just all the time. He would get up in church all the time and have something to tell. Anyway, so he was telling this story, his story about Sasquatch and how he met him. And it was, I don't remember because it was a long time ago. I don't remember the exact details. And I don't know that I was paying that close of attention. I was just kind of a kid. And but I caught glimpses of it. And it almost was like a combination of the original jack-o'-lantern stories.
Not familiar.
So originally the jack-o'-lantern wasn't a pumpkin. It was a turnip.
Okay.
And it was a guy who had... I can't remember. He lost his soul or lost his head or something. And so he was doomed to carry this lantern around that was made out of a turnip or whatnot. I'm going to have to look that up. But so it kind of seemed like a mixture of that story and then the Will of the Wisp.
Mm-hmm.
How you don't follow the lights that are off the trail because you'll get close and then there'll be another one, another one, another one. So it almost seemed like that's what was going off. He was following these lights out into the forest. He was lost. And then he encountered Bigfoot and it scared the crap out of him. And anyway, so I do know him personally who claims to have seen him. And then I have a friend that I grew up with that's really interested in Bigfoot, Sasquatch type stories. And have you heard of that guy? What's his? I think Utah Sasquatch is his Facebook page.
Okay, I've probably seen it, but...
So I think that guy's interesting because his story is that his brother was really into Bigfoot stories and was convinced that it was real and was always studying it. And this guy had gone to college and he felt that he was more enlightened than that. And he scoffed his brother for believing in Bigfoot. And then one day he was like, wait a minute, if I am so high and mighty in thinking that this doesn't exist, I should at least apply the scientific method to it. And so he started studying it pretty hardcore, and he's had encounters now and is full on believer because he was applying the scientific method to disproving it and ended up proving it to himself. So he's a local guy, and my friend knows him, and my friend says he's going to take him out and find. He says at this point he sees him all the time because he knows where to go and he knows what to look for. And so he's posted some videos online that are pretty convincing. I mean, they're still not, because they're so elusive, it's like difficult even when you're trying to get good video, even when you know where to go. But I think he just put up a Patreon. So he put up a Patreon. He's like, hey, you Facebook, I'm going to be gone for 6 weeks while I get this stuff set up. And anyway, so he says that you really have to go off the trail to find him. They're really high up in the mountains, just so that they can be away from people. I guess there's a park it's pretty far up, but it's still a park and it's still something you can get to by a car pretty easily. He says he doesn't see them there much, but he sees evidence of them there all the time.
Well, we'll have to check it out sometime.
So yeah, I want him. I want to go check it out. He posted the other day something about taking dogs with you.
Yeah.
Take a dog with you because they'll notice things you don't. He says he takes his dogs and the dogs point him out where he would have missed them quite often. So anyway, I've mostly been a believer.
Yeah.
I've heard enough and read enough, and I'm sure some of it's fake. But I
believe Sasquatch can do whatever he sets his mind to. I believe.
I'm a believer. I admit it.
Love that sass.
A big part of the show is that I like to share some kind of found audio. And I didn't have anything for this week. I didn't know what I was going to play. So on a whim, on Saturday night, my wife was working. She's on a film set right now. She's recording a church video for a Southern Baptist church, an Easter video. So she was gone, and the kids had gone up to Grandma's house because Grandma wanted to take them to a play. So I was just sitting here by myself, and I thought, I need to go and find myself some audio. So I went to the local thrift store, and I had just about given up when I found this CD. It's called Sounds of the Cinema, and it's by Beth Annalisa. And this is the kind of thing you look for. You can tell it's just printed on a home printer and then cut out.
No barcode.
No barcode. And then, you know, even the label's just been printed out on a printer. And then it's probably one of the sticker ones. Yeah, it's one of the sticker ones. And it's funny because that's the sticker paper's a little higher quality paper than she used for the front. So that bled a little bit. But anyway, so, I mean, that's the exact kind of thing I look for. Totally handmade. I mean, it's not even cut out terribly great. A little bit ragged on the edges.
Is there a year on the release date?
Copyright 2003. All songs performed by Beth Annalisa and original compositions by Beth Annalisa. So these are songs from, like, movies and stuff, but they're her own compositions of them. And then the last two songs are just her original songs, I think. Oh, no. The last two are her original compositions. I guess the other ones are not, but she played them. What do you think? Which one should we play?
Ooh, I gotta take a look at this. Well, we got some Jerry Goldsmith and John Barry. Most of these I haven't heard of, though.
What's funny is I think I'd heard of most of them. I just hadn't heard them in a long time, and so I couldn't even remember what they sounded like.
Okay, I recognize a lot of the titles.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I recognize a lot of the titles, but they're like things that used to get a lot of play, and then not anymore so much.
Hmm. Are any of them particularly awkward?
Yeah. So the last one is particularly awkward. It is the exact kind of song I don't like.
And that's her own composition.
Yeah. It's one of those songs where they're telling a story very, like that Christmas Shoes song.
Ah, don't get me started.
Yeah. It's sentimental and it just, but it's not musical. It's just a story that you set to music, and it's not particularly lyrical. It's not particularly lyrical, or the words, they're just pretty straightforward. It's not, you know, how lyrics are. They paint a story, but they're not so straightforward about it. So yeah, that's, I honestly, I've started it like three times and I couldn't even, I couldn't even get through it. But if you think that's what we should ow, that was my neck.
Oh, you hate it that much.
If that's what you think we should expose everyone to.
Let's try the theme from Missing first.
Okay, that almost sounds like a spy thing.
I got some Vangelis for you.
Okay, I'm going to pause this. Because you may have noticed how loud the noise floor is. It's like just really loud hiss. I suspect these were recorded onto some sort of tape medium, except for that last track. That last track was done in a studio.
Oh, really? Yeah. So her entire budget went to blank CDs, CD stickers, and the last track.
Yeah, the last track I think was done in studio. She probably did it with a friend because there are vocals, whereas all the rest of them are just piano music. Yeah, there's no noise floor on that last one. It's, you can tell. And then like a lot of it's synthesized, whereas the other ones, it sounds like she's playing on an actual piano. And I noticed, I'm pretty sure it's tape because I was playing this on my car stereo earlier and the fuzz came on and I'm like, yes, I'm gonna turn on the Dolby noise reduction. And as soon as I turned that on, it was quiet. So I'm pretty sure it was recorded with Dolby noise. All right.
You thought the windows were open, but...
All right, so let's see. Back it up. Restart it. Here we go. Thank you. It's pretty pleasant. Yeah. It's relaxing.
Speaks to your soul, don't it?
I've never heard of missing, but that was the theme from it.
Thanks, Beth Annalise.
Annalisa.
Lovely.
That's what I thought. I mock the cover and everything, but it's pretty decent playing. Badly recorded, but decent playing.
But you do what you can.
Okay, I'll give you a taste of the last track.
Uh-oh.
Because the whole CD is that. It's just nice, pleasant piano music, right? And then you get this. That's as far as I've gotten. I can't go any longer than that. Like I said, that's just, I can't handle that kind of songwriting. I know it works for some people. I know, because that Christmas shoes thing gets played and played and played every year, but it's more than I can bear.
Amen.
More beer? Sorry, just made me think of Beauty and the Beast. Have you seen that new one yet?
Not yet.
It's pretty good. I've liked the other live action ones they've done, so I will give it a shot. I haven't been to anything lately. I can't even think of the last movie I went to.
Yeah, me neither.
I think the last movie I went to was one that I really wasn't keen on going to. I just went because there was a group of people going, and I wanted to be social. So I went, and it turned out to be a good movie, but it was still a movie that I could have waited to see as a rental. But there's a bunch out that I want to see. I haven't seen Lego Batman. I haven't. What's the one that just came out?
Kong, Skull Island.
Yeah, Kong. That one came out. And there was, Logan, I'm interested in seeing. And I swear there were a couple others.
Yep, I haven't seen him either. Gotta, crawl out of my hole and go to the movies.
I have to figure out how to make more money if I want to go see more movies. Things have been tight lately.
Mm-hmm.
This week's interview is with Justin and Joshua, my friends from junior high. All right, well, welcome to the interview portion of the podcast. We call this section iTick. We ask everybody the same questions, and we're just trying to boil down and figure out what makes a person tick.
I got really excited about this segment because I thought it was about The Tick, one of my favorite TV shows with Patrick Warburton. And then I found out what it really was.
I actually have that series somewhere over there, and I haven't finished watching it. I like the cartoon better.
Really? I love Patrick Warburton's take on it.
I like Arthur better in the TV series than he was in the cartoon.
Arthur's awesome. When the Tick is like trying to convince Arthur to come back onto his team, because Arthur's like had enough of it. He's like, "You, my friend, are on a first name basis with Lucidity. I have to call it Mr. Lucidity, and that doesn't work in a pinch." My favorite line of anything I've ever watched.
Have you seen the new series on Netflix? I haven't watched it either. I heard it was kind of in between.
Okay.
So it was like a little better than one and not as good as the other.
Interesting.
So, anyway. Tell us your names and what you do.
I'm Joshua, and I do pricing at Overstock.com.
Okay.
And I'm Justin. I work as a database warehouse developer, which is kind of as meaningless as what Joshua just said, which is funny because we worked together in the same department, and even my wife doesn't know exactly what I do, even though I've explained it to her multiple times. But yeah, IT stuff, and people's eyes sometimes start to glaze over, and so it's okay.
You just give the bare minimum of what you need. Yeah.
And sometimes it's just, I work on a computer all day. Oh, okay.
or I work with a database.
Sometimes that's stretching it, though.
Yeah. Even I get that, though, when I say, well, I'm a digitization specialist.
I'm an audio restoration engineer.
So, yep. Well, I've got these guys on the show because I've known them since junior high, and we've been very good friends for many, many, many years. And so,
except for that time I stole Richard's girlfriend.
There was that, but she never really was my girlfriend.
Yeah, but you were still mad at me for a year.
Well, and that's, I don't remember it being that long.
It was a whole year. your you can cut this out, Richard, but your yearbook comment in my yearbook that year was, I am so jealous and you know it. So I'm glad that's all passed.
Oh, me too. Well, I don't remember it being that long, but okay. Joshua.
Yes.
Tell us your earliest memory.
My earliest memory is a reoccurring nightmare that I used to have when I was a small child.
Okay.
I dreamed that my mom would send me down to the store to buy a bottle of aspirin. But when I got there, everything suddenly turned black and white, but not regular black and white, like really grainy black and white. Like the world had been drawn on an Etch-a-Sketch by someone who didn't know how to do it really well. And so as I went down the shopping aisles, it was hard to tell what the items were, and I couldn't tell oranges from bottles of aspirin. And now how am I supposed to be expected to shop under these conditions? And then the world became two-dimensional, and I had to run away from large boulders that would fall from the sky, and men with really long fingers that would flow as they walked and wave their hands by their sides like you do when they walk. But they were long like whips. And they would be like, you forgot your aspirin. And it was terrifying. And I would run out of the store, which was now the side of a mountain, and flee and wake up screaming.
I'm terrified just hearing about it.
You're not the first person on the show whose earliest memory was a reoccurring nightmare.
Sweet.
I think that's interesting. Justin, what's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is my great-grandparents giving me a bank to save money in, shaped like a barrel. It said 1979 on it, which would put me at 2 years old. I don't think I got it in 1979, but I do distinctly remember being in my grandmother's living room with my great-grandparents, who I didn't know at all. They smelled really weird. And I was afraid to even go over to them. And so I kind of just stayed in between my mom's legs, you know, standing in between her legs. And they're like, go get your bank. And I'm like, no. And, you know, that's my earliest memory, is this vivid memory of being in my grandma's living room with these strangers that I was supposed to be nice to, but I'd never met them before. Even though they had a present for me, it wasn't an interesting present because it was this brown barrel. But it had... you remember the old punch tape that you could label makers that snap to punch the letters in?
Right.
It was just those cut out that had my name on it, and then from Grandma and Grandpa Van Wagoner in the year. But that's my earliest memory, and I'd have to say I was three rather than, you know, two. But that's my earliest memory.
All right. So tell us another story from your childhood, something that's influenced your life, maybe something you haven't shared often.
When I was around 4 years old, I invented the scientific method. My dad was mowing the lawn, and I noticed that whenever he pushed the lawnmower forward, grass would come out the end. And that when he stopped, grass wouldn't shoot out it anymore. And I reasoned the why that it did that was that because the blade would obviously stop spinning when the lawnmower was standing still. And so I thought to test that, I should stick something in there while it was spinning, while it was stopped. While it was not moving forward. And then I could verify that it didn't spin anymore. So I looked around for a stick and I couldn't find one. And I thought, I could just stick my toes in there. And so I walked up to it deliberately across the yard and stuck my foot right in the outlet where the grass came out. And as it turns out, it still spins while it's not moving forward. And I ripped up my shoes and terrified my poor parents. But my hypothesis was denied. And I had to think of a new hypothesis after that. And I always... I got upset with myself because I had reasoned it out so clearly in my mind. And my experiment should have worked. And it bugged me that I was wrong more than it bugged me that my foot was mangled in an accident with a lawnmower.
Joshua's the kind of person that there's an XKCD comic where there's this machine with a button on it that says, do not press this button. And the guy walks up to it and goes, boink, and gets struck by lightning. And then it splits. Like, the frames go in two directions, you know, left and right. And the left one has labeled normal person, who says, boy, I'm not going to do that again. And then the other one is labeled scientist and says, I wonder if that happens every time. Joshua's on the scientist side. And I have to admit that I probably would be as well. One of the things, being friends with Joshua for so long, is that he's not like anybody else I've ever met. And that's just a great thing to have, that kind of dynamic in your friendship. And he's the only person I know that has specific rules for what can happen in your dreams. He can fly in his dreams, but only if he's wearing roller skates.
Ice skates.
Ice skates.
Ice skates.
Ice skates. He can shoot laser beams from his eyes, but only if he's standing on a balcony. What are some other rules that...
Those are the strongest
rules. Those are the strongest rules.
Yeah. I can glide in some dreams if I don't have ice skates on.
Okay.
But only if I'm wearing green.
Okay. Now, and I've had dreams before where I distinctly remember one in particular where I was in a barn trying to reach down a bridle hanging from a peg, and it was just out of reach. And I have this distinct memory in this dream of going, oh yeah, I can fly. Because somehow I had remembered another dream where I could fly, but it wasn't really flying. It was really more like a gentle float up, grab it, a gentle float back down. I do have those dreams where I'm being chased and I'm running in slow motion. And at some point as a teenager, I realized that if I reached down and grabbed the ground, I could pull myself forward. And I'm sure if you were to look at that from an outsider's perspective, I'd have like 8 feet long arms that are reaching down. Because it's not like I'm bending over.
Right.
I just reach down. And if I can grab the grass, it makes me run forward. And I will have those dreams where I'm being chased. And I'll be like, oh yeah, grab the ground to go faster. So it's like I have this dream memory that persists, but only inside my dreams, right? Do you have any weird dream rules?
No, I don't think I do. If I realize I'm dreaming, I can fly.
Okay, so like a lucid dreaming.
Yeah. If I can get into a lucid state, then I can just fly. But I cannot control the flight pattern terribly well.
You're like the greatest American hero.
Yeah. But it's like... into different... I mean, I can kind of generally get where I'm trying to go, but it's pretty...
And the only time generally that I can tell I'm dreaming is if something is supposed to smell a certain way, and smell doesn't work in dreams.
Right. Mm.
So if I walk by something that's cooking, and I take a sniff of it, I'm like, wait, nothing smells like anything. And then I realize I'm dreaming, and that scares me, and I wake up.
There was an episode of Batman the Animated Series where Bruce Wayne is basically trapped in a dream state, right? And he reasons out that he's dreamed because he can't read in his dream. All the letters are all jumbled up and weird.
That often happens to me.
And I will have dreams where I can read something and I'm like, that Batman episode was full of garbage. I've had that dream happen multiple times.
I can read in a dream, but I cannot go back and read again.
Oh.
If I can read a page. If I look away and look back, it will have changed.
Okay.
And most of my flights end in me falling.
Mm.
So if I'm flying, I typically cannot land. I will just completely lose control. I will fall from the sky. And then I'll have that jolt you awake.
I've only had one of those fall jolt awake dreams.
I have those all the time.
Whenever I have them, it's always like I've been tripped. I'm walking and somebody trips me. I very rarely have those I'm falling out of the sky dreams. Only one that I can remember.
I get them. That's a beginning of the dream cycle thing for me.
Hmm.
So it's like when I'm falling asleep and I'm just starting to dream and I'm walking and I will slip. It's always a slip. It's always my feet going out from under me.
Hmm.
And it always feels exactly the same. And it jolts me awake.
Now, my sister had a dream that she was about to get run over by a bulldozer. So she jumped out of the way. Right into the wall and hit her head on the wall. Woke herself up.
That's good. And I also realized that sometimes the fall... Usually when I fall... Okay, so The jolt awake is always the beginning of the dream and a slip. The fall from flight, it's a falling at the speed you fall. Mm-hmm. And then when you get close to the ground, you slow down and just gently fall into bed, come to think of it. Hmm. Justin, do you have a story from your childhood that's influenced your life?
My kids and I have this tradition every winter where we build a ginormous snow slide in the front of our house. It's hours and hours of work. Every snowstorm, it's another 8 to 10 to 20 hours sometimes of building it up taller and taller. And learning engineering of snow has been interesting from year to year. And also, this year, we had a really good start. We had a really good snowfall. We got this thing going that was about 6 feet tall. And then it just overnight went super warm, and it's all gone. When we do have, you know, good storms, good weather that stays cold, we've built them as high as 12 feet tall in our front yard. It's this huge castle looking thing with stairs up, multiple slides down. You know, you got the beginner and the advanced staging areas for the different kids, you know, comfort levels. And that all comes from when I was a kid, and I would say I was maybe 10 years old, when we had a huge snowstorm and I wanted to go outside and make something cool in the snow. And me and my friend down the street, we decided we were going to make basically a roller coaster in our backyard. It was going to have this 10-foot high staging area. It was going to go down into an upside down loop. And banking turns and back to the beginning, right? And our plan was, you know, go down to the school and get all the snow and bring it into our yard. And there was just all the snow for the taking at the school. You know, and me as a 10-year-old not realizing the logistics of, yeah, how are you going to get all that snow?
Hauling thousands of pounds across town.
But when we had this super cool idea, we were so excited about it. And when I went and told my dad about it, he just completely shot us down, right? And in my mind, I wish the way that that had happened was, that sounds amazing. Why don't you go do that?
Right.
And then we would have figured out how hard and stupid that idea was. But we might have still made something cool in the backyard, right?
Right, right.
And that's always kind of stuck with me as like, that could have been so different if it had gone a different way, right? Because even when we were little, I shouldn't say little, but even as a teenager, Joshua and I would make Calvin and Hobbes snowmen in his front yard. We made one in your backyard. I think you were already on your mission.
On my mission.
We came and made some Calvin and Hobbes snowmen in your backyard. And it was just always fun to play in the snow. And but it wasn't until I, you know, married with kids where I got these super huge projects that have like been on the news because they were so big and so cool. And I wish that could have gone differently as a kid, but it's something that shaped me, right? It's a tradition that we have. Even if there's like this tiniest skiff of snow, my kids are like, let's start on the snow slide. Yeah, we need a little bit more snow, guys. We're gonna have to wait. But it's a fun tradition but it's built on this kind of negative thing that happened to me as a kid. So I tried to take that and turn it into a positive. You know, I think your goal as a parent is you're constantly battling with them to make them do things they don't want to do, but it's because they don't think they can.
Right.
And it's making them realize that they can do hard things, that they can do more than they think they can. Right.
Justin, share with us a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life.
I think like most teenagers, I listen to music nonstop. A lot of it was Dr. Demento recordings, but then a lot of it was just other stuff I came across randomly. There was a Dr. Demento song called Whirlpool that I really love. Found out years later that it was the Meat Puppets. Love this song. Tells this cool story about a whirlpool who didn't want to stay in this lake anymore. He wanted to travel the world. Musically or whatever it was, I think there's certain songs that connect with people, right? This was one that connected with me. I was at a record store as a teenager and heard a song. They were demoing a new album on the speakers. And it was a song that I was kind of interested in. And so I went over to look at it. And I was looking at the album. And on the back of the album, it had a song called Whirlpool. And I thought, I wonder if it's the same Whirlpool. Because I had no idea whether this was a brand new album, an old album.
Right.
You know, because it was just at a random record store. But so I bought it. And it turned out that it was Seal's first album, which I just listened to nonstop. And it turned out, you know, it was a different Whirlpool song. But I still love those Seal songs that I listened to from then.
I searched high and low to get this album, first of all. And it's not because just Whirlpool, it's also because of Sam, which was another song that Dr. Demento had played. Mm-hmm. And I knew both of those songs off of this album. And then I found out they were both on the same album. And then I was like, I have to have
it. Oh, yeah.
I just found out today that Meat Puppets had a second album.
I think they have multiple albums.
Yeah, several. I've
only ever seen Too High to Die. Mm-hmm. And I love every song on it, but I didn't know they had others.
Well, they've got a few on Spotify, but this is not among them.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what kind of prompted me. I was looking for stuff on Spotify, and I found Meat Puppets, and I'd heard Whirlpool on Dr. Demento, and then They Might Be Giants did a cover of it, which I did not like. So then I found out that Sam was also on this, and Sam is just cool because it's just fast. I don't know how you say lyrics that fast. It's just rapid fire. It's just a cool song.
More recently, and I don't know, do you have a song that connects you with the universe? Like, it just does something to you? I can't even hardly explain it, but there's this song that I saw it on YouTube. It's this random Japanese robot dancing weird video, right? But it's a group called World Order. Japanese group. The lead singer is a former MMA fighter.
Okay.
That retired, but he was very flashy, showy. The song is called Machine Civilization. And whenever I listened to it, and for the longest time, the only way I could listen to it was on YouTube. And so I would just found a website that will let you just repeat YouTube videos. I would just put it on repeat and listen to it over and over and over again. Whenever I listen to it, it makes me feel connected to something more. And I don't even understand most of the words they're saying because it's in Japanese. But something about the music, the rhythm, whatever it is, connects me. The only way I can explain it is that it connects me to the universe.
Hmm.
And it was fascinating when it happened because it's this song in Japanese. I don't even know what they're talking about. And but it just grabbed me the very first time I listened to it. It just grabbed me from the very beginning. And I just had to listen to it over and over and over. And I always had part of the song running in the back of my head for the longest time. And I've had that thing where it's like, has anybody else experienced this? And I've asked people and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. But then I feel sorry for them because it was this amazing experience to have this. It wasn't like it was a spiritual thing. It was just like, I was connected to something bigger than I was. And it's not like it's made me a better person or anything. All I can say is that it was like I was having a trip, you know? Ooh, look at my hand. Look how big my hand is. You know, it must be what people experience when they're high, but because it was just this, I wasn't a better person afterwards, but it was a very unique experience that I still, if I need a little pick-me-up, that's the song I'll go to.
I think I kind of know what you're talking about. But
it's not like you want to start crying. It's not like it makes you emotional.
Right.
It's just like I'm part of something greater than myself in the universe, right? It's really hard to explain.
I think you explained that. I think I've had an experience like that. I don't think it was music related.
Hmm.
But I think I felt what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Joshua, do you have a piece of music that's been highly influential in your life?
I can think of a couple. I didn't listen to music at all for anything when I was a kid. My mom didn't listen to any music, and my dad listened to music that was terrible. So I just assumed all music was like, we sing at church, and sometimes at Christmas, and sing the national anthem on the 4th of July, and that's music's proper role. We never played music in the car. We never had any music in the house. I remember being in 4th grade the first time I thought, hey, music is cool. We should do more of this. And I was listening to two pieces, Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture and the music to the Superman movie from the 80s. And those two pieces of music made me think that music was worthwhile because I'd never given it a chance before, nor had I listened to anything that mattered. So that's early childhood. And so I thought I was a big fan of classical music for a long time. And as it turns out, those two pieces are pretty much what I like in classical music. I'm not saying all classical music is bad. It just doesn't do a lot for me. So I listened to a lot of classical music when I was younger and then didn't really enjoy it. I started listening to more modern music in junior high mostly because Justin told me to.
We would go to the CD store and he'd go right for the $5 classical music bin while I was trying to find They Might Be Giants and other stuff.
And so I was trying to go with what I knew I recognized as good in the past, And I wasn't really looking to expand because I didn't really care. So Justin had loaned me CDs. Not CDs, because I didn't have a CD player. I had a tape player, and so Justin would loan me tapes. The first tape I bought that was like music that was good was Songs of Faith and Devotion by Depeche Mode. And I was 17 at the time, and I had a job sweeping floors at night, and I'd throw that in my headphones and play that really loud while I was doing tedious work. And it was amazing. So Songs of Faith and Devotion definitely goes on my list of music that had a highly influential impact in my life. So after that, I started listening to more modern music. It always confused me that every album is about relationships, and 3 out of 4 songs are love songs, and the last one's about a breakup. So I didn't like that because I didn't have the context to listen to music about relationships. So it didn't make sense. And so I would connect on 1 or 2 songs on an album, and mostly stuck with, like, They Might Be Giants, who didn't sing about relationships, because that worked for me. The first time I heard a love song on the radio and it made me think of something that I actually experienced was Lisa Loeb and the 9 Stories. Bought her album after I graduated from high school, and I listened to it, and it spoke to me. And I listened to that album every day for the rest of, like, a year. I don't think I went a day without listening to that. That and Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill were probably the biggest musical influences on me from high school up until I got married.
Share with us a piece of media that's been influential in your life. This can be anything.
Batman, A Lonely Place of Dying. What you get in A Lonely Place of Dying is Jason's died and Batman is without a Robin. And Tim Drake, who is Batman's next-door neighbor, figures out who he is and understands that Batman will work more effectively if Robin is beside him, and tries to convince Dick Grayson to come back and be Robin again, to unite the team. And, you know, the future should be like the past because it was better then, is the theme. And as it turns out, it's not better, because when Dick Grayson and Batman get together, they fight about stupid stuff, and the Scarecrow kidnaps both of them, ties them in a basement, and threatens to murder them. Like, actually successfully murder them, until Tim breaks in and saves them both, and, you know, everybody's happy. I love that story. It's not particularly well written when I go back and read it again. And it suffers from all of the, you know, the tropes that comic books are famously bad for. But when I read it when I was 17, turning 18, it meant a lot to me. If you're talking movies, right after I got divorced, I saw Fight Club for the first time. Now, it had come out years before, and I had no interest. But I was with a group of friends, and there was a girl that I kind of liked. And she's like, stay and watch. And I'm like, all right. Like you do.
Right.
And the combination of, you know, the overall message of the movie, how do we define ourselves as men, and the hilarious nature of the pranks that they would play, and, you know, just the overall good quality of the movie, it became something that I identified with. The main character was a mathematician, and, you know, had just where I was in my life, it fit me.
Justin?
This one's kind of a tough one for me, because I think the biggest impact for me as far as mediums has been music. I'm very much a audio learner. My wife is always surprised that I know the words to every single song ever, because it's just something that's easy for me, you know. I don't know that there's been anything long term. I've definitely had things that have influenced me that I was the best ever for about a year, right? Mm-hmm. There's not really anything currently that I go back to kind of, you know, like those guys that read Lord of the Rings every year. There's not something that has resonated with me enough that I go back to like that. Mostly because it's a different experience the next time, right? And you're in a different place, and so you get something different out of it. I think a part of me doesn't want to ruin what I got out of it the first time. Like, it was meaningful enough that I'm good. I love Groundhog Day. I quote from it all the time, but it's been years since I've watched it. You know, musically, album to album to album, it changes from year to year. But even books, I read all the time, but even the stuff that resonates with me is different than what it used to be. I'm having a hard time kind of singling out something that's had a huge impact other than kind of what we've already talked about with that World Order song that really connects. You know, I went through periods where Strange Brew was the best movie ever, quoting it nonstop, you know, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I think that's that one I actually have watched recently because I introduced my kids to it. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those movies where you have to watch it before you turn 20 or it's the stupidest thing you've ever seen. And so they've been getting exposed to it from different, you know, YouTube videos or whatever that was making references to it, and they had no idea. So I finally was like, all right, let's sit down and watch it. Everything for me is in stages. I don't have one that's had like a permanent tone, you know, mm-hmm. a note through my whole life. There's been a lot of things that have been impactful at the time. Right after I broke up with my girlfriend, I would listen to a lot of Nine Inch Nails. But it had its place, and now it's not so much. A couple of years ago, it was Happy, Pharrell Williams. They had that music video that was a 24-hour music video. Mm-hmm. I literally watched the whole 24-hour music video multiple times by just having it running in the background. Mm-hmm. And just loved it because it encapsulated everything about how I felt at the time. Everything was going great. Job was great. Family's great. Everything's great, right? It just kind of was the soundtrack for that summer. But then, of course, you know, things don't stay great all the time. And so then it was a different song. But I think that's what's great about art in general, right? Be it mm-hmm. books or music or even paintings, you know. There's stuff that I loved when I was younger that doesn't do so much for me anymore. But I think that's the great part of it, right? Is experiencing something new that resonates with you, not relying on the same old, same old.
So Justin, tell us about your passion and why you do it.
This is another tough question for me because I don't know what my passion is. I have been fortunate enough to have been in the right place at the right time as far as my career goes. When I was a high schooler, I didn't go, I'm going to be a database warehouse engineer when I grow up. Mostly because nobody knew what that was, right? I mean, it's something that's grown up as technology has grown. Whenever we would take those aptitude tests in high school, my score allowed me to do anything I wanted. And that was no help, right? I'm trying to find something. So even as an adult, I ask kids, what are you going to be when you grow up? Because I'm still looking for ideas. This has actually been a legitimate thing that I have thought a lot about and read a lot about. You know, one of the things that they suggest is ask your friends, what is it you won't shut up about, right? And obviously, I know Richard is passionate about audio. Right. When I ask people,
do me, what am I passionate?
Joshua's passionate about falconry. You know, when he gets started, he gave this awesome presentation to our department at overstock.com about falconry. And even years later, people still talk about it. And the funniest part of that story is that we had this tradition where, you know, right around Christmas when people don't want to think about work anymore, we had these, every other week we'd have a training meeting. And the week before Christmas, that training meeting would be, submit whatever idea you want to present about, and we'll give you some time to talk about. So we had everything from intro to skiing, to Joshua's falconry, to I don't know what all.
An amazing reading of Fox and Socks.
Oh yeah, I read Fox and Socks for the group because I have a talent for reading Fox and Socks. And if you want to know the trick to that, it's get the audio recording that right. Dr. Dement, I don't even know who the reader was.
But I have it.
Listen to that over and over and over and over again and basically memorize the book. And then you're able to read it at a good clip. I do that at talent shows. We had a new hire that she just was, okay, next meeting on my calendar is this meeting. And she gets in there and she is just like, what is going on? She's texting her friends at her last job. You won't believe the meeting I'm in. Because she had no idea that it wasn't a legit training meeting. When I ask people, you know, what am I passionate about? I get kind of different answers. And my interests just change so fast. Just kind of like, you know, my interest in music wanes, you know, very rapidly from one thing to another, to the books that I'm reading, to I'll binge read something and I'll get into the middle of book four and just be done. I got book four sitting on my nightstand. I know exactly where the story was when I put it down, and it's been 6 months since I've even looked at it. That's something that's been on my mind a lot, especially with, you know, your job, 8 hours of your day, you want to be doing something that you enjoy. And like I started to say, I've been very fortunate where not having any kind of a plan of what I wanted to be when I grow up, I've been able to, you know, find good jobs, take care of my family. But at the same time, it's not following any plan or following any, like, happiness of chasing my passion. Mike Rowe, the Dirty Jobs guy,
yeah,
he talks a lot about following your passion is dumb, right? Because one in how many actually makes it to the NFL? You know, one in how many makes it to the NBA? Doesn't matter how passionate you are about basketball. Doesn't matter how passionate you are about guitar. I think it was Steve Grohl did a YouTube video about, I'm going to show you the hardest thing to do with the guitar. And you're like, oh, cool, let's see it. And he's got his guitar on his lap and he's getting ready and he makes like he's going to strum and he reaches to the table and grabs a paycheck and he says, get paid for playing. Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm in that maelstrom of like, follow your passion, but I don't know what my passion is. I'm very jealous of people that, like Richard, that loves audio and has found a way to make that a part of every day that he does. You know, these kids that know from the time they're 6 years old, I'm going to be a plumber when I grow up, or I'm going to be a doctor when I grow up. And they do, right? They never lose that passion for it. They just know. And I've never been able to figure out that about myself. So I'm always very jealous of, like, Joshua knowing he wants to be a gorilla when he grows up.
All right, Joshua, tell us about your passion and why you do it.
Okay, the gorilla thing is actually real. When I was, you know, a child, kindergarten, first grade, the teachers will tell you, you can be anything you want to be when you grow up. And they tell you you have to pick something. And so I picked a thing. And I picked a thing that I loved, and that was to be a gorilla. I had a spot picked on the mountains next to my house where I was going to live, and I practiced building nests in tall grass, and I practiced eating grass at recess. And I was 100% certain and devoted to this plant, and for when I got a career, I was going to be a gorilla. It turns out that your kindergarten teacher is a dirty liar, and you can't become anything you want when you grow up. So, there you are. I studied math. No, I didn't study math in college because I was amazingly drawn to it. I hated math until 11th grade, but I was always really good at it. And so when you're good at something that most people hate, the momentum is to become better at that thing. So that's where I found myself. And I didn't like math until I took probability in 11th grade. And it's not that Mr. Kuntz was a great teacher. I mean, he was, but he was also my analytical geometry teacher, and I didn't love analytical geometry. And he also taught me trigonometry, and I didn't love trigonometry. But he taught probability, and I did love probability.
Did that have anything to do with the blackjack table?
No. The blackjack table helped. So it made math useful in a way that was interesting to me. And I had never seen that before. And then you take calculus, and I didn't love calculus, but I didn't hate calculus. And calculus was the first straight-up math class that I didn't hate. One day when I was in trigonometry, I was late to work because I went to buy a calculator. And I didn't have anything set schedule at work. It was one of these start before 10 o'clock and leave when you're finished type of jobs. And my boss was there, and I was a janitor. And my boss's name was Dave. And Dave was about 150 pounds overweight, and he had shirts that were too short. And his shirt would come up to his belly button, and his belly would hang out at the bottom, and it was really hairy. And Dave was a man that didn't smell nice. And he was a manager at the janitorial company. And I think that's the best job Dave could ever hope to get. Because he was not nice, and he didn't speak well, and he didn't relate to people in a manner that was cordial or pleasant. So Dave says to me, "What you got there?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is my new calculator I just bought." And he's like, "Oh, that's cool. That's a lot of buttons." I'm like, "Yes, it is a lot of buttons." And he says, "You know, I took algebra in high school, and I've never used it a day in my life." And at that moment, I said to myself, "Self, you are going to use math every day for the rest of your life, and Dave is why." So
to not be Dave.
To not be Dave. That was, yeah, and that was my motivation through college, was to not be Dave. And so I studied the crap out of math. And then when I failed my weed out class in math 7 times... That's a couple of years that you got to stay in school, and you can't just only take that weed out. It was the only class I had left. You can't just take that class over and over again, because if you drop below 12 credit hours, you got to start paying back your student loan. I didn't want to do that, so I started taking economics because it looked interesting, and as it turned out, it really was. And so after college, when I got my job, I got a job in programming because it was related to math. I found that in my spare time, I didn't read books about computer programming, and I never read books about math. I read a lot of sci-fi, but when I read nonfiction, I mostly read economics. And so that's why I decided, let's go for a master's degree in economics. Let's move to a team on work that deals with economic principles and uses economic models to solve pricing problems. So that's where I'm now. I found just by analyzing what I do in my off time, can I use that to affect, you know, can I get into that? Now, economics is not where I ever pictured myself. It was what I did so I didn't have to pay off my student loan. But it caught my interest and it became a passion. And that's where I'm. So I'm passionate about birds and I'm passionate about Batman. But you can't make any money on that. And I gotta kind of bring home a paycheck. So economics is the thing that I can be passionate about and also get paid for.
Awesome.
So I can relate to your comment about, you know, you have passions you can't raise a family on, right? Because I think I do have a passion for making people laugh.
Mm-hmm. And you're good at it.
And I enjoy making people laugh. I have a whole index of stupid jokes that the only point of them is to get a laugh, get an eye roll, but I enjoy lifting people. That doesn't mean I want to be a stand-up comedian, because that's a rough life, you know? There's very few Seinfelds that make millions of dollars being a stand-up comedian, right? I think that's part of the reason why I have been, in my career, successful, because that sort of translates into a people person. Even though I don't have the technical chops that someone else might have, I have social skills that sort of make up for that. Josh was saying that about, you know, passionate about things, but you can't make money off of it. That sort of reminded me that I do enjoy making people laugh, but it's not something you can make money off of easily.
Very true. Justin, what makes you tick?
Honestly, I would say that. I went through some dark times at my last job, and honestly, what got me out of bed and at a job that I hated was the people that I worked with. And when I left, that's what I missed, was the people that I worked with. And, you know, not just because Joshua was there, but there was a whole team of great people that I got to work with and I still see frequently. But it's the people. I think it's the relationships and hopefully feeling like I've done something to make their day a little happier, a little better.
Joshua, what makes you tick?
It's not what Justin said.
Joshua and I make a good team because I'm the happy one, he's the grumpy one. But I'm kind of the straight man to Joshua's goofball. I think that's part of why, like I said, we've worked together for a long time on different jobs over many, many years. I think the friendship like the three of us have is rare. You know, how many people are still hanging out with their friends from junior high?
I don't know very many.
Not anybody I know.
I'm not much of a people person. Yeah, I don't blame you.
I tell my wife stories about Joshua and she's like, why do you like him? Because Joshua has a low tolerance for stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And the perfect story for this is when he worked at the TCBY at the airport, people would come up to order a smoothie. And there was a big sign on the smoothie machine that said, out of order. People would come up and say, can I have a strawberry smoothie? And he'd say, nope.
It wasn't just on the smoothie machine. It was on the menu that said the prices of the smoothies. And there was another sign right on the cash register that said the smoothie machine is broken. And when I said nope, I would tap the sign that said the smoothie machine is broken that was right in front of them the whole time.
And then they would say, well, can I have an orange smoothie?
Nope.
Why not?
Because the smoothie machine's broken.
Like, where a normal person would just be like, no, the smoothie machine is broken, right? Joshua just has a very low tolerance for stupid, and I think that comes off as he's mean to people, but I think to a certain extent, we're too tolerant of stupid people. I shouldn't say stupid people, because we all have our moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the glaringly obvious that's overlooked, he just has a low tolerance for that, and so he comes off as very rude sometimes. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've known him for 20 years, but it's... he's not being rude. He's being as polite to you as he can for how stupid you're being.
Yeah, so it's not that. I'm not motivated to get up and be with people. I could work alone for years and not even notice that nobody was around me. And I love you guys, but I hang out with you when you call me.
Right.
So that's not it. I think what gets me up and gets me active about things is when I can come up with solutions to problems that I have. That is like the kid with the lawnmower. You know something's working in there. You don't know how it is. You got to solve the problem. You got to figure out why. And I think figuring out why is a thing that motivates me. I'm very driven to look into things, and I'll be interested in researching things as long as I'm curious why they're happening. Where I get into trouble at work is when I have a problem that's very easy to solve and it doesn't interest me. I put off a lot of projects that I could easily finish in favor of projects that are difficult and will take me some time. Mm-hmm. Not because I want to look like I'm working harder, but because I'm going to take the project that interests me first. I think that's a thing that makes me tick. I like working with birds because you never know what's going on in their heads. And you got to work out solutions. Well, can I design a better perch for this bird that will mean he's not going to tie his feathers in a knot? And you read about what other people have done and you try it out and you get one that works perfect and it's great and it's happy. And you're like, I could improve that. And that's the next step. I could improve that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming and being on iTick.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
Thanks, sir.
Very enlightening. So Justin mentioned that he has this song that when he listens to it, it connects him to the universe. Have you had that experience where you listen to some song and it connects you to the universe?
I have. I think you have to be in a certain state of mind for that to, happen. Not necessarily, like substance induced, right.
Well, that's what he was saying. He was saying that it was really weird and he still has a difficult time explaining to people what it feels like. But he said it was really kind of like being on a trip. I've never done drugs, so I don't know, but that's what I imagine it would feel like. I kind of know what he's talking about. I think I've felt that feeling, but not in relation to music.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I think, music is the closest thing. I don't know.
I think I've felt it when I've been really into artwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can agree with that. Like when you get in the zone.
Right. There's just that feeling, and I imagine that's what he's talking about. Joshua had his wedding, so I spent some time with him. And one of the funny things that came out of it, we were talking about stuff, and I'm a total audio snob. Like, I always liked when surround sound started becoming like a thing that you could bring into your home. I did. And I have always appreciated just really good audio and always have strived to have good audio in my stuff. Apparently, Josh can't really hear good audio.
Yeah.
He was telling me that when he rips CDs, lowest setting. And it just sounds just fine to him. Other people, he say, listens to his music and they're like, your stuff sounds like crap.
Has but, he spent much time with...
Well, different... that's the thing. He said he's ripped them at both settings. He literally can't hear a difference.
Does he listen... if you listen to it at different volumes, you can start to... That's when it really becomes
That's noticeable. True. When you turn it up louder, that's when you can hear the MP3 birdies.
So I think a song can connect you to the cosmos. You got to have it at a good volume.
Yeah, it's got to be at least 90 decibels.
A good album for that is King Crimson's first album, The Court of the Crimson King.
Okay.
Check it out.
So I'm thinking that on this episode, I'm going to try to do an experiment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to take a quadraphonic track off of one of these records and record it with this surround sound recorder that I've got and try to get a binaural representation of it. I think I'll do both. I think I need to do stereo and then fade it into the quad so you can hear the difference. So I think that's what I will put next
on. And make this a big announcement when you change it or see if...
No, I'm just going to switch it and see if people... I have a demonstration of that on... I built a binaural mic once and it worked, but it had a problem. For some reason, it buzzed whenever I recorded with it.
You got a bee stuck in it?
That must have been what it was. So it worked. Like, the binaural effect was there, but there was this buzz. And I was able to filter it out, but I didn't want to do that for everything I ever recorded with it. So I never recorded anything with it again. It's still kicking around here somewhere, and maybe someday I'll fix it. But if you go to my Instagram, there's a demo. It's from The Best of the Doors. I think I did People Are Strange. And I switched it from the stereo to the quad and demonstrated it using binaural recording. So find my Instagram. Instagram.com/RichardBMcLean. You can track that down. Or you can just listen for a couple seconds and I'll try to stick something else on here. I haven't decided what yet.
Do it.
Hey, thanks for coming and bailing me out, Mitch.
Anytime.
Remember to give us a call. We want your gaming stories. 3 to 5 minute gaming stories. 801-SKETCH-1. That's 801-753-8241.
Do it!
We're on iTunes. We're on TuneIn. I called it Tuned In last week with a D. Uh-huh. And then I looked it up and I was wrong. It's TuneIn. So yeah, iTunes, TuneIn. Please leave a message.simplecast.fm. And we're also, you can listen to us 6 o'clock on Tuesdays at www.freeradioprovo.tk. It's an internet radio station.
What does the TK stand for?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I had not heard that one before, and I didn't look it up either. So I was just happy that somebody wanted to just, you know, have my content on.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Thanks, Mitch.
You bet. Thank you.
Richard.
Yeah.
What did Queen Victoria say? after trying the Oculus Rift?
I don't know.
They are not amused.
Edit that group out.